Iowa everywhere.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Spring is here. It's time to start thinking about family fun in the outdoors. This is Chris Williams promoting my good friends at Plaza RV in Bonder Ranch. I've now bought two travel trailers from this locally owned company in the past 5 years. It's completely changed my family's life. We love spending time in the outdoors, tailgating, and most of all, being together. Camping has been an awesome escape for us, and I would encourage you to think about it as well. Head over to their lot in Bonder Ranch. They have motorhomes, travel trailers, truck trailers, fifth wheels, and more. Check them out today at PlazaRV.com. They're 100% locally owned. Tell them that Chris Williams sent you.
From the Channel Seed Studios, Nick Olson and Jake Brent talk all things Big 12. This is Firmly Entrenched. Powered by Heartland Flags and Gifts. Every team, every sport, every flag, almost. Here's Nick and Jake on Iowa Everywhere.
Hello and welcome into the Channel Seed Studios. We are live on a Wednesday afternoon. As always, thanks to Heartland Flags and Gifts. I'm Jake Brend, live in the actual Channel Seed Studios, joined by Nick Olson up in Madison. What's going on, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. We've got a loaded show today. I give you credit for the shirt. I love it, but it hurts a little bit extra this week. You know, for those that can't see it or just listening, Jake is repping, of course, his NBA champion Denver Nuggets.
About to be two-time. We got a good show today that's going to, well, we'll probably get to some NBA playoffs at the end. But before that, got a lot of transfer portal stuff. Joshua Jefferson coming in. Couple destinations for some former guys. Women's basketball had a huge week. We're going to recap the spring game, a little NFL draft, Tyrese Haliburton in the playoffs. It's a lot. But before we get to today's show, just some news. We're going to be taking a break after next week's show, just in the off season, a little detox from the show. So tune in next week. You won't want to miss it. It'll be a good one. Today, let's start with Joshua Jefferson coming in to round out, really, Iowa State's 2024-25 roster. 6'8 forward from St. Mary's. He will be a junior, and the COVID year's done for him, right? So he'll have 2 years of eligibility left, 10 points a game. Efficient from the field, 6.5 rebounds, good defender. What do you think about this pickup, Olson?
Massive. I think that this is probably, you know, my favorite pickup in the portal for ISU. Honestly, I think that, you know, there were a few names out there in kind of the position, really that forward spot that Iowa State was looking at. I kind of wrote it in some of the notes. I feel like Jefferson fits ISU like a glove. I think that he's going to bring the defense, the defensive intensity, the talent. I think it's awesome that you get him for a couple more years. I mean, if you're looking hard, really the only spot I could even try to find a potential weakness would maybe be three-point shooting, but that's not really what they're looking for from him. You know, he can pass 2.5 assists per game. Obviously, you mentioned some of the scoring. So I think that that's a perfect addition to put with guys like Milan Momcilovic. You obviously have the Charlotte transfer, the loaded guards coming back, including some of the depth brought in there. I think this is perfect and a really nice job from the staff.
So he shot 27% from three last year, which, yeah, not great, but it's also going to be a huge upgrade. Him and DeSean Jackson, just in that part of the game over Big Rob and Ward, where those guys were no threat at all to stretch the floor. If these guys, if Jefferson's making 1-3 every other game, that's at least keeping the defense to honest enough where last year it's kind of just the big guy catches at the high post, catches at the top of the key, and there's not a guy within 7 feet of him bogging down the paint, which then makes it hard for guys like Taman Lipsey, Keyshawn Gilbert, who do really rely on getting to the rim. So I think this will be the best of both worlds. I was watching his tape. He is a really good passer, which does fit in a lot of what Iowa State wants from that big guy, especially at that high post. It's hitting a guy that's cutting. So that'll be a big fit. And then, of course, I mean, you talk about the defense. It is what it is at this point. You're not coming into the program in Ames if you're not either a plus defender or willing to play as hard as you can to become a plus defender. So all that being said, I agree. It's a really good fit. We also learned yesterday that Caden Fish will be jumping out of the portal and recapturing that scholarship. So that's scholarship number 5 that was open, and it is a full roster as of right now, unless nothing changes. What do you think about Iowa State's roster top to bottom right now?
Yeah, I think first off, you know, it's really nice for the program and fans that this roster is basically like set already, which I think is really impressive. And you know, I think back to kind of my first year at Iowa State covering the portal, obviously with the AJ Green stuff, that went all the way toward June. So that's a positive right off the bat. I think that this is awesome, quite honestly, for both parties. I mean, I don't think, you know, Caden Fish is expected to be like a star for Iowa State this year or necessarily long term, but I think he's a guy that can be a star in his role, which is kind of a gritty player. You know, obviously he has added some skills, specifically offensively. He's physical. He can defend. And I just think he fits the culture really well. So that's kind of what I feel about Caden. And as this roster as a whole, I think it may have the highest floor in the country. I would put that floor up there with anybody like Houston. And I think what we're going to expect to see from Kansas. So obviously all these teams coming from the Big 12, I think the backbone is certainly there defensively. I like a couple of the additions offensively, specifically Nate Heise, you know, the Northern Iowa transfer. And I just think it's really well constructed. Like, you don't really see any potential weaknesses unless there are just a bunch of injuries, which obviously is unlikely. So, yeah, Jake, I'm a huge, huge fan and huge proponent of this move and this roster.
If I want to play devil's advocate, or if you want to play it, if you had to poke a hole in the roster, where would you go? And I'm having a hard time thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people from the outside maybe would have said shooting a couple months back, but I mean, we've seen the growth from Lipsey. Obviously, Momchilovich, we know what Kurt Jones can do.
Heisey.
Yeah, I'm not sure I really could come up with one. I mean, if I had to, yeah, I'm not sure I could. I mean, maybe experienced post-depth, just because after, you know, Jackson, that group is young. But, I mean, that's JT Rock, who everybody knows I am very, very high on. I think he's done some great things development-wise. Obviously, adding muscle, you know, he's always been very skilled. I got the chance to see him a ton in high school, and I think he's going to slip right in, whatever that role looks like, 10, 15, 20 minutes per game, whatever they need him. So I don't think that there really would be, you know, any clear weaknesses in my mind. And I think shooting and depth just all over, including in that front court, has gotten better, even with the 3 significant losses there.
Yeah, for me, I think there's no doubt. So I didn't pull the numbers. I'll just have to go from memory. But Otz's first year offense was ranked in the 180s. second year, it jumped up into like, was it the 90s, maybe or low hundreds. Last year, gets into the high 40s, low 50s. I'd expect it to keep climbing next year into those maybe high 20s, low 30s range. And I mean, if I'm trying to come up with a flaw or a potential problem, it's still just, I need to see kind of the offense go a couple months without one of those dry spells that they've been known to. But I mean, with what they're bringing back and what they're bringing in, of course, on defense, but other weapons on offense to just keep it steady. And I mean, you get a full off season for a lot of these guys. You look at the jump that Lipsy made in his first full off season. What's Keyshawn Gilbert going to do in his first full off season in Ames? What's Milan going to do? So there's a lot of stuff to be excited about. And this is back-to-back seasons now. Back-to-back off seasons where maybe Iowa State didn't have a quote-unquote perfect offseason, because if it was perfect, you would have went out and got Zeke Mayo. You would have went out and got Golden from FAU. But it's back-to-back years where Ott isn't wasting time trying to compete for a guy like that, where you're going to have to pay $1.2 million in NIL or whatever nonsense it is. But it's back-to-back years where they pretty much, I mean, I remember last year, literally day one or two after Iowa State lost in the NCAA tournament, you on your premium board laid out, like, keep an eye on Pavelski, keep an eye on Keyshawn Gilbert. And they pretty much executed their plan within 2 weeks. Same thing this year, a list of seven, eight guys, and you end up with really four of them. And there's probably one player that they're planning on that fell through. So that's just a very impressive coaching job by Autzen and his staff, because it's setting up to be a very anticipated year. And Marquette's coming to Ames for the Big 12 Big East Challenge. It's probably the first time in, gosh, 7 years where Iowa State's actually played a compelling opponent at home in one of these challenges. The last one I can remember was when they lost by like 40 to Tennessee. I think that was 2018 or something like that. It was bad, but feels like Iowa State never gets good opponents in these things at home. We'll move on to the women in a second, but just wanted to mention Omaha Blue to Wake Forest, Tyrese Hunter to Memphis. And then we mentioned it last week, but Pab to Ohio. I guess for Omaha, what type of fit do you see there in a, gosh, I'm blanking on the town where they play. I should know.
Winston-Salem, right?
Yeah, Winston-Salem. Yep.
Yeah, I really do like this fit. You know, this wasn't a team, like I didn't hear kind of a ton going on in terms of just teams out there kind of involved with Omaha, but I think that this is awesome. I really like Coach Forbes over there. I think he's really good at connecting, kind of getting the best out of guys, specifically some transfers that we've seen in the last few years, including just this last year, of course, with Hunter Salas. I think that it's a spot where you've got to defend, which I think he can be really, really good at, especially within that system. And, you know, I think it's just away from kind of a lot of the Big 12 expectations and away from the Midwest a little bit. So I think that that's an awesome fit, and I'm actually really intrigued to see how things work out there in the ACC.
Yeah, I'll be pulling for him. I'll be honest, I don't know much about Memphis basketball since Iowa State beat them back in Ott's first year. They've really kind of been irrelevant. So who knows? Maybe I do feel like, I mean, obviously, I think anytime you leave the Big 12 for another conference, it's going to be a drop down in competition. But I do think a drop from, I guess, what would have been the SEC to the American is probably right for Tyrese to maybe, I don't know, go to a place where he can be appreciated, because he wasn't really appreciated in Austin. And maybe he can refine some of that swagger that he had his freshman year in Ames. But I honestly don't know much about that fit. And then Pab to Ohio, that's a good fit. He's going to be an all Mac level player for a couple of years there. So I'll be pulling for him hard.
Yeah, I love that fit. You know, just like putting in a perfect spot, I think he might have found the best fit for his game. Like you said, he will have a massive role. And then for Tyrese Hunter, you know, I think his game, I mean, I think he has the game. We saw it to make an impact in the Big 12. I think he did it in the SEC, but you're exactly right. I think that he was maybe looking for more of a clear-cut role. You know, I was kind of deep in this recruitment a little bit, kind of just trying to cover it and figuring out what was going on. Obviously, Wisconsin native. And I think this is going to be a good fit. I think with Penny Hardaway, you know, I think a clear-cut, like, lead guard role, I think it was maybe tough at times playing with, like, other kind of ball-dominant guards in Austin. Obviously, he got to do that at times in Ames. So I think that's going to be really good. And, yeah, I'm just excited to follow how these guys all do, quite honestly.
It's a lot of flags if you're following all these guys. If you want to support Omaha Blue, hometown kid, went to high school like 25 minutes away from here, you can go and buy yourself a Wake Forest flag at Heartland Flags and Gifts. You can go in-store at 3719 Southwest 9th or online to heartlandflags.com. Free shipping to anywhere in the U.S. So Omaha, if you're listening, out in Winston-Salem, you can get free shipping over there in North Carolina. They got new products constantly. You could support your NBA team. So I've got an NHL team. I'm a huge Blackhawks fan. But when your team's not in it, I like to throw a little wager just on a team on DRF Sportsbook, so I've got someone to cheer for. So I'm a pretty big New York Rangers fan right now, cheering for my main man, Artemi Panarin, old Blackhawk, the bread man. So maybe I could buy a New York Rangers flag if they manage to make me some money on DRF Sportsbook. Again, that's heartlandflags.com. The women's team, a little quiet for a couple weeks, and then boom, back-to-back days, you pick up two players that are not projects. These are day one. I would imagine one of them probably fills Hannah Bellinger's role. The other one is going to be that probably sixth player off the bench, or I guess first player off the bench. So they bring in Sydney Harris, 6'1 guard from TCU, and Mackenzie Hare, a 5'9 guard from Marquette. Both will be juniors, and both shoot better than 40% from three. Harris averages a little over 9 points a game. Hare averaged 14 a game this past year. So this is a stat from friend of the program, David Braga. Other than Audie Crooks, who shot a couple threes on the year, made a couple, but not exactly a stretch big. Iowa State's two worst three-point shooters that are returning are Addie Brown and Kelsey Jones, who both shot 38.8% from three. Is the formula blatantly obvious for you on what Bill Friendly's trying to do, Nick?
Man, the fact that is like some of the worst numbers, like you said, for many teams, that could be among the best. So I think the formula is clear. You know, some great notes from our friend David. And wow, I mean, I have to be impressed because it was a little bit of a quieter time, you know, certainly compared to like kind of some of the excitement about spring football and 2025 football, obviously the men's portal. But then boom, boom, like you mentioned, Mackenzie Hare, you know, I didn't watch quite as much. I saw a little bit of Harris at TCU, you know, in some of the Big 12 matchups, but pretty familiar with Hare's game, obviously playing in Wisconsin at Marquette. I would think that she kind of ends up starting. Either way, you've got a great top six, but that is just a massive get. And I just feel like with the youth on this team, of course, the continuity with the staff and then Emily Ryan coming back. Again, we talk about some expectations with the men's team. I feel like they've got to be there pretty comfortably for the women's team as well, Jake.
All that, you also bring in Ailey Tankey from Johnston, who won a national three-point contest for high schoolers. So just another sharpshooter. I would say they, I mean, they still have a few open scholarships. So I would imagine they probably go out and try to add maybe a front court depth piece or two, yep, just to have, because Nadabu transferred out. So probably need someone behind Crooks. Just, I mean, Audie's not going to play 40 minutes a game, and there's going to be games where she gets in foul trouble. So that's what I'd expect, but probably not high flying NIL players. If I had to guess, a couple, right, maybe a JUCO player that here or there to develop in the program. But yeah, it's, you talk about expectations. It's going to be a top 15, top 10 preseason team with what they have coming back. And like, just like I talked about the men, you saw the jump that Tame and Lipsy made from year one to year two last year. How many women on this team are in this program for the first year where, I mean, Fenley talked about it at the Cyhawk game where he just said, well, 8 months ago, Caitlin Clark was playing in a national championship and half of our players were at prom. So you just put that into perspective. Now they've got a whole year in the strength and conditioning program, a whole year in the gym. Just it's going to be a very, very exciting time. And I'll be interested to see what they do with those last two or three scholarships.
Yeah. You know, right when you were kind of going into that, Jake, post step is exactly what I kind of thought of, because otherwise you've got the shooting, you've got that kind of high end talent in the starting lineup, whether you're looking at a little bit of veterans now with the transfers or just the young freshmen, soon to be sophomores coming back. I think that's a spot you can never really have enough depth. I think we saw it in the post, oh, yeah, like Hassan Ward when he went out. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense for the men's team as well as the women's team. I think it's just a maybe obvious glaring spot. And I use quotes because it is just going to be a depth role when you've got one of the best post players in the country in Crooks already. But I'm really intrigued to see, you know, kind of as they continue to add shooters and just those percentages, like you mentioned, this should be a pretty special, I think, high octane, high shooting offense under Fenley this year.
Yeah. So you talk about the shooting and you look 38, 38, 40, 41, 42, just all those numbers. I think the instinct for an Iowa State fan is to think, oh, Hoiball, you're going to win some awesome games, but you're not immune to losing a game in Lubbock 62-50 because you can't buy a three. You can think that, but you have to remember that probably the main source of the offense is Audie Crooks down low. So to not only have all that shooting will stem from Crooks being down low, drawing a double team pretty much every time she touches the ball. So it's a really smartly constructed roster if you're looking just in April. We'll obviously have to see how it all works out next season, but man, that's probably the last serious basketball talk we'll do for a while, just because, I mean, there's not much to happen now. It's just develop over the summer and get ready for a season that is going to be talked about a lot come the fall.
Yeah, I look forward to it. And I think that, you know, we're really going to be saying that about both teams, like you mentioned. It's just going to kind of be this quiet period for a little bit. But then you're looking at, what, guaranteed a top 10 team in the men's. And where would you put the women? Pretty close?
I'd probably put them in that 10 to 13 range.
Yeah.
I had to guess. And the men, I think, are going to be in the top five, unless something happens. Pretty consensus though so far. Most sites in their early, way too early, have them in that top five range. Crazy stuff. And there's going to be some expectations for the football team. Do you want to talk a little bit of TJ Tampa in the NFL draft or spring football first?
Let's do a little bit of TJ Tampa.
All right. Well, NFL draft starts on Thursday night. That's a really fun night for me. Yes. I I'm not like the biggest draft fan in really any sport. So I'll be pretty locked in for the first 10 picks or so. And then, I mean, the Nuggets are going to start. So I'll be sipping on a glass of Steeple Ridge bourbon, watching the Denver Nuggets and following the NFL draft pretty closely. Get yourself a bottle at your favorite liquor store or grocery store. So TJ Tampa probably isn't going to hear his name called Thursday night. Friday night's probably the more likely. Where do you think he gets picked? I trust you more on this stuff than I trust myself.
Yeah, I think he's, man, I still think ceiling-wise he could be a day one guy, but you're right. More than likely Friday night. And I've got him as probably going in early to mid round two.
Okay.
You know, I think I've seen him as high as 33, 34, as low as like those mid to high 40s, I believe, is kind of that high end. You know, I just think in TJ Tampa, you're getting the total package, honestly. I mean, he's athletic. He's got a great basketball background. He showed a ton of development between that would have been year two and year three. You know, I know obviously from covering the team, there were a bunch of flashes like from Tampa early on, whether it was like spring ball or fall camp, but he really, really put it together that 2022 season. Then, of course, opted to come back to Ames and I think just showed how complete he really is. You know, I wouldn't necessarily use the term ball hawk, but like he's got good ball skills and can really just do it all. So I think he's got the potential, whether he's going to start or just be like that third or fourth corner for a team. He's going to make an impact early, but I do think that I would probably have him as a day one starter.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next. Where do you envision, I guess, his 8-year outlook in the NFL? That's usually about the cap for a defensive back.
I think that he's going to be, yeah, I mean, I'm really high on TJ Tampa and his work ethic. I think that he will be at least 5 to 7 year starter, making an impact there with probably a Pro Bowl type ceiling, not necessarily going all the way all pro, things like that. But I mean, I was actually talking a lot of draft with some friends in the media this week. This is a really good corner class. And I think that a lot of those guys, I think of Cooper DeJean, I think of Quinyon Mitchell, like really impressive top guys. And I think you're going to see at least 2 or 3 of these guys get some all pro nods in their futures. I think Tampa is going to stick around in the NFL because he's got that size and kind of that mix with speed and athleticism that the NFL is shifting to a little bit. I think of a guy like Sauce Gardner. So I think that TJ Tampa is a great fit for this current league. And I think just based on the tape that we've seen and the improvement, I think he's going to stick for a long time.
Yeah. And he's not a guy that it's easy to forget. He didn't come into Ames as a corner. He was a wide receiver. So to do what he did in a pretty short amount of time on that learning curve, you have to think that he'll just continue to keep on that upward trend just from the instinct side of it, because the body's there, the physical traits are there. We've all seen the high school dunk. So
yeah.
It's just a matter of if a switch flips even more. It could be a really good career for Tampa. And honestly, that's probably it for any Cyclone getting drafted this weekend. That's the other side of the coin when you return
everybody.
Almost the entire team is you're just not going to have many guys to follow. You'll have some undrafted free agents. I'd imagine Easton Dean finds a landing spot on Saturday afternoon, but yeah, for Cyclone fans, it'll mostly just kind of be tuning in to see where Tampa goes. And then after that, I don't know. See who's going to be blocking for Brock Purdy. Cause they got to figure that out.
You know who else I think could at least get kind of some, at least training camp type deals, if not undrafted free agents. You know, Ben Nickel tested really, really well.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
he's got 40 time.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's going to end up on like a roster, but like at least a camp guy, you know, a special teams type guy. And then Chase Contreras.
Oh, that's right.
I think there's a shot that he at least gets some time in a camp or potentially a deal, because frankly, he was awesome in Ames last year.
That dude's got St. Louis Battlehawk written all over him. That's an Anthony Becht product right there.
Yeah. That'd be sweet if he ended up there.
NFL draft just a few short hours away. It won't feel short though. Want to talk some spring football?
Absolutely.
What was Wisconsin's spring game this week?
No, so not really an official spring game in Madison this year.
Oh, well, yeah. There wasn't one in Ames either, trust me.
Oh, tell me a little more.
I mean, I wasn't there. I had a bachelor party. So I would, like, throughout the day I was following on Twitter, and then the next day I went and tried to watch as much stuff as I could. Obviously, the staff isn't putting out the full game because they don't want those guys down in Manhattan to see it. But I tried to see as much stuff as I could, but it was the same as last year, pretty much, where I don't know. It's just a scrimmage. You kind of play in different scenarios, but for the most part, Iowa State's number ones on offense didn't play. Mm-hmm. So you got to see a lot of guys that you maybe didn't last year, which I think is exciting. But I know you're going to get into some of the offense. For me, I know the defense looked good. It's just hard to take a lot from the number one defense playing against essentially the number two offense. But what's stood out to you mostly on Saturday?
Yeah, I think, you know, where my brain first has to go is somebody that whose recruitment I got to cover a little bit. That's running back Dylan Lee.
Oh, yeah.
I think that his blend of size, speed, and power is going to be awesome in that, you know, Matt Campbell, Taylor Mauser offense there in Ames. Obviously, we're looking a little bit long term, you know, certainly because that room has some talent and experience now a little bit coming back. I'm Usama Carson Hansen. But I think Lee looked terrific in the highlights and, you know, just the little that I've heard outside of that. I think that I'm excited about kind of the tight end depth this year. I think we talked about it last year. Obviously, we were spot on about Ben Bramer. And of course, you know, that a lot of that room is back. You lose Easton Dean, but a lot of guys do come back there, which I think is very exciting. And then, you know, this isn't so much the spring game, but just spring football recap and looking ahead. You mentioned it a little bit in kind of your draft teaser, Jake, but the continuity of that roster. You simply don't see that really anywhere in college football these days. And I think it speaks to the culture there. You know, obviously Coach Campbell, I do think kind of that player retention and kind of what We Will has done, I do think that definitely gets some credit there. And then, you know, I'm fine saying I don't think the team's being overlooked because it's March and April polls, but I don't necessarily think that they're getting maybe enough national attention, whether that's just in like the top 25 or like a playoff dark horse or even just the running for the Big 12, because I know that that's going to be, you know, a really fun kind of up in the air type league this fall, but I'm not sure how you couldn't have Iowa State as one of those top contenders there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Big 12 never really has been talked about like the SEC or the Big 10, and for good reason. It's not on the level of those conferences. And now you lose Oklahoma and Texas. So I do think that you're going to see teams in the Big 12 not get discussed a ton nationally. And I do think the conference is going to be down again. I mean, you do lose two blue bloods of the sport. And while I think Iowa State's going to be a top four team in the league, I don't think there's going to be a ton of discussion nationally. And that's probably a good thing because, I mean, 2021, Iowa State was picked as college football playoff contender, and we all know how that season went. So I would imagine that Campbell and the staff don't hate flying a little bit under the radar. But I do agree. The team's probably not getting enough attention, but at the same time, I don't really think many teams in the Big 12 are getting attention either.
Yeah, I've seen Kansas get some, and
probably Utah.
Yeah, I was going to say Utah, a little bit of Colorado, but I definitely hear.
I don't count that arena football team.
But I definitely hear you on that, Jake. And, you know, I also want to mention just briefly, as we just kind of think of who's all coming back and the few number of starters that did leave, I bet Gary Vaughn ends up in a camp too.
Not necessarily the
biggest guy or the fastest guy, but when you've got that type of just production and leadership, you can generally at least get into a camp and, you know, see what happens. I mean, he's a guy that actually could have a pretty long career in the UFL, you know, if he doesn't get to kind of stick in the NFL. But I think he's going to get a chance. And even if you don't hear a ton of names, I think there will be guys signing some deals. And then next year for Iowa State, you can hear a really, really almost extensive group of names.
Yeah, it could be similar to last year where Hutchinson, McDonald, you just had a lot of guys. One last thing on football. So let's say Dylan Lee comes in and is just a beast. One of those guys you can't keep off the field. Obviously Sama, he's running back one. That's probably not going to change, but let's say he outperforms, say, Carson Hansen in camp. What type of role, whether it's Hansen or Lee, could you see the third running back having? Maybe do you try and throw one in the slot? Just because I do feel like you've got three guys that are capable of starting on this team.
I love that question. I think I'm not sure I foresee, you know, this happening, because I know that the staff there really does love Hansen too. Like, they love all three guys. But I would think if something like that happened, I don't think you put Dylan Lee in a slot, but I could see you getting a little bit more creative with a guy like Carson Hansen, just because he's shown kind of his versatility and adaptability, obviously coming from a bit of a different offense in high school. It was like a wing T or something similar to that. I also like his speed. He's just kind of an athletic freak, what he can do. So that'd be kind of a spot. You could put him in like an H-back, F-back type role, just kind of get him off tackle a little bit. I think it'd be a lot of fun. But, I mean, as we expected, I don't think there was really any concern about, you know, running backs under Matt Campbell. But I think this room, again, it's a young room, but I think it's going to be in a really good spot going forward.
And then they're up to the peril of the offensive line, which, you know my thoughts on the offensive line.
I do, and you know mine.
No, I know.
They're going to be better this year.
No, I agree. I think you're right. Well, let's talk playoffs. The NBA playoffs, I love it. I know a lot of Iowans don't. So if you're not an NBA fan, we apologize. We are going to talk Tyrese Halliburton. Mm-hmm. So stick around for that. We're in the Channel Seed Studios talking playoffs. So Tyrese Halliburton probably isn't having the playoffs that most people expected. And so I watched the NBA all year round. I'll get glued in for the draft. I watched the summer league. I watched a little bit of preseason. I'm a sick, like, I love the NBA. Mm-hmm. So I've been following this story all year round, where you come in November, December, Halliburton is unquestionably a top 10 player in the league. You could even argue a top five. He was looking like he had a shot to be an MVP, All-NBA, first team candidate. Mm-hmm. A lot of Cyclone fans I know watched the in-season tournament, which was kind of his peak of the season, where he just totally went off against the Bucks. About a month later, he hurts his hamstring. He plays in the All-Star game. hits a bunch of threes, but really ever since that hamstring injury, he's not been the same. And I have a theory on why. So this year, the NBA brought in a new rule where you had to play 65 games minimum, 20 plus minutes to be eligible for awards. All NBA, MVP, most improved, all that good stuff. So one, there is the actual getting the award, but the NBA also, the way they structure their contracts, you get major, major, major incentives for extensions if you're an all NBA player. So this year, if Halliburton was an all NBA player, which those teams aren't out yet, if he's an all NBA player, he is eligible for $45 million more on his next max contract, which he will almost certainly get. If he's not, of course, he's going to make a little bit less. So what I think happened was Halliburton was incentivized to try and play through a hamstring injury, which is not an injury that really you can play through and heal. It just kind of something you deal with. So I think he was trying to get to the 65 game threshold, but he's had a really rough stretch after the All-Star break and might have played himself out of that all NBA spot. And you're kind of seeing the effects right now where he has not been himself through the first two games of the playoffs. I don't know how much you've been watching, but what have you seen from the former Iowa State product just through two games so far?
Yeah, Jake, you know, if I had, you know, the opportunity, man, I would watch every single playoff game.
Why weren't you there? Why weren't you there? That's like an hour away from you.
Work keeps me a little busy, but no, sincerely, you know, I think that was a really kind of good, well thought out theory. I do think there's potentially some legitimacy there. I think it's also just wanting to get back for your team, you know, because he's a guy that clearly this game means everything to him. You mentioned it in the notes a little bit too. He looked a little bit better in game two, a game, you know, that the Pacers looked pretty darn good, especially with Pascal Siakam. But, you know, as a whole, I think it's the injury. I think there are some shooting slumps there involved. And I think that at times defenses did a little bit better job keying in on him. I'm not sure I would say that's the deal right now with the Bucks, because they haven't really impressed me defensively, especially at those guard spots. Although Dame Lillard has looked terrific offensively, but yeah, overall, I think
one half.
But definitely, you know, I think that he's at least got this team in position, and I believe they're back to favored again to win the series. Speaking on Tyrese, so I think that'd be massive. I think he's just kind of working his way through it, and then you'll see what the team can really do. But yeah, that's an injury. It's one of those, you know, soft tissue type that is just hard to kind of nurse back to health if you're still being active on it.
So I think the biggest problem is the probably aggressiveness. And this is what I heard this morning. I was listening to Kevin O'Connor's on the Bill Simmons podcast on The Ringer. So O'Connor's pulled these stats where pretty much pre-post All-Star break, Halliburton's numbers finishing at the rim in the mid-range are pretty much about the same, along with his catch-and-shoot threes. It's his off-the-dribble threes that have dropped a substantial amount, which would line up with kind of a nagging hamstring injury. So I wonder, I know that he is the spark of the offense, and he's the one who makes it run, and he's the oil in that engine. I wonder if there's ways to get him more looks kind of catching and shooting, whereas he's not trying to force himself, because though his shot is awkward, there's no doubt about it, but his first 3.5 years in the league, he was an elite 3-point shooter. It wouldn't make sense for him to just all of a sudden not be. So you combine a slump with an injury, it makes sense. So I really do think the Pacers are going to win the series. It doesn't. A report came out this morning that Giannis hasn't even started running yet. So I don't see how he's back this weekend for games 3 and 4. So if they can defend home court, get a 3-1 lead, I mean, you're in the driver's seat at that point. It's and then who knows from there? If it's the Knicks, we all know how many minutes Thibs plays his guys. So they're pretty much begging for injury when you play your guys 46 minutes a game down the stretch of the regular season, and then they're playing 48 a game in the playoffs. So that if Haliburton can maybe just power through, find a little bit of his swagger again, they've got a shot to make a little bit of a run mm-hmm. in the playoffs.
Yeah, they do. This weekend will be massive, though, because like you mentioned, taking care of home court, it is a little bit easier said than done. So it really kind of big opportunities for them. But just the fact that they were able to, you know, eke one out in Milwaukee, especially after they did not look very good.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't ignore how bad they looked in game one.
Yeah.
It looked like a young team that was there for the first time that wasn't ready for the moment. So who knows? Maybe getting over that small hump in game two. And that's the beauty of the playoffs, especially in basketball, probably more than any of the other sports that play seven game series. If you're the road team, all you have to do is steal one. And then that mm-hmm. flips all of the momentum. And they did that.
Yeah, I totally agree. But then again, credit to them and credit to Coach Carlisle for how they bounced back in game two. Because, yeah, they looked atrocious at times in that first game. But obviously, tallying that victory. And now I expect, especially, I'm sure you saw, you know, some of Tyrese's comments just about kind of how loud it was or a lack thereof at Pfizer Forum. I almost, you know, brought in that sound for the show, but I'm really intrigued to see now how it is at home at their place this week.
Yeah, so I mentioned flipping momentum and stealing a road win. The other night, Nuggets down 20, I fell asleep. So the Lakers tie the game. Yeah, the Lakers tie the series one game apiece. They go back to LA. No, I didn't fall asleep. I actually,
oh gosh.
So I was working. So I was on air like very beginning of the third quarter. I change out of my suit real quick. And I'm home for the whole fourth quarter. So that's kind of where I got to watch an instant classic. But yeah, I was a happy man all day yesterday, and you know me. I've been saying I'm not afraid of anybody, and I'm not, because down 20, I still thought they were gonna win, and I threw we'll just say a couple units on the Nuggets live at our good friends at DRF Sportsbook. I'll just leave it at a couple units.
Do you mind sharing what odds you got them at?
It was minus money at halftime. It was so stupid. They're down like 15, and it was still minus money. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, that showed you, you know, the respect that they have. I mean, I had seen tweets about it. So fortunately, I guess, and unfortunately, that was one I did get to see. And, you know, Vivi sitting next to me on the couch, and they're down, or the Nuggets, I should say, are down 7 midway through the fourth. I'm not feeling good. But then, like, LeBron makes that spectacular defensive play, throws it down. Okay, awesome, LeBron. Porter comes back to tie it with that 3. It was like, that truly was an incredible night of hoops. And then LeBron misses the wide open game-winning 3. And right away, we're live, so I'll keep it appropriate. But I was like, I look over to Vivi. I'm like, this is going to freaking sting. And then Murray just dribbles it down the clock. You've got a top 3 defender on him and Anthony Davis, and to no avail. The guy is just as smooth and clutch as they come late. Truly, I'd put him up there with Steph and Luka in those situations. And I couldn't even be upset. It was like, if you blow a 20-point lead to the champs, well, I guess you tip your cap to the Nuggets, but you've got nobody to blame. And I didn't love that the Lakers were going a little bit at the official.
Oh, it's so predictable.
But congrats to you, man.
If DRF had those odds, if D'Lo and LeBron were going to attack the officials publicly, I would have thrown a mortgage payment on that.
But either way, truly congrats. I mean, now they look like they have this feature of inevitability. The Nuggets do. I mean, could the Lakers win one at home? For sure. But I don't see them getting both. So, yeah, it should be another fun playoff run for you, my friend.
You know how the old saying goes, it's hard to beat the same team 11 times in a row. Maybe 12.
Yeah, I think this would be, yeah, I think this upcoming would be 11.
Yeah, it's 10 in a row right now. And I'm glad LeBron finally hit some shots in the fourth quarter. Because I didn't think the game was over when it was down 20. I thought the game was over when Denver cut it to one or two. It was two. And then LeBron hit those back-to-back threes with like five or 6 minutes left. That's where I thought the game was over. Because in this 10-game winning streak, the one thing that LeBron has not done is do anything in the fourth quarter. He's had some really good first halves, but he's pretty much run out of gas every single time. So when he finally had it in the fourth quarter, I'm like, okay, that's what it was going to take. But it's inevitable.
It must be nice, man. Must be nice.
Ever as a sports fan, maybe since those Blackhawks teams, those Blackhawks teams, especially that last one, the one that won in 15, they kind of limped through the end of the regular season, and then Corey Crawford just turns it on in the playoffs. I kind of have that same feeling where it's just, you know what? I don't even get nervous for these games. I just have a feeling that Jokic is going to figure it out, and he's smarter than anyone else on the floor. Even LeBron, who I would have probably before that considered like the smartest player of all time, which I'm a lucky sports fan because it's going to end. It's going to end one day, and it will never, ever be the same ever.
Yeah. I mean, you've got two of the best minds of basketball ever going against each other. Like LeBron, you know, a top two, top three guy ever. Jokic playing his way comfortably on that upward trajectory. I mean, he is the greatest player on earth right now. And just enjoy it, man. Not everybody gets to see it.
I'm not taking it for granted. I can tell you that much. There's no way. Well, I think that's going to wrap up this episode. We had a good show today. Aiden, any thoughts on the Cubs?
Cubs are back.
Yeah, I think so too. They just got to get healthy.
Yeah.
They're playing really well, and they're just banged up. They're banged up like no other.
Mash Mervis is back, so that's exciting.
Well, he's got to mash a little bit in the major leagues first.
Yeah. One thing I do want to say, the first NBA game I watched this year was the Nuggets Lakers the other night.
Game two?
Yeah, so that was a good first game to watch. It's been the best NBA season I've ever seen.
I was gonna say, Aiden, they're all like that, dude. You gotta tune in more.
That doubleheader was crazy. We didn't even talk about the Knicks Philly game. But that into that was crazy. Yeah, that's what every night is like. But that's gonna do it for us this week on Firmly Entrenched. We will be back next week with our kind of last episode before a bit of an off season break and detox. Thank you to Heartland Flags and Gifts and Steeple Ridge Bourbon. We've been in the Channel Seed Studios.
Iowa everywhere.